You're listening to Cinematic Adventures, proud member of the Misfit Faction Media Network.
Good morning, Vietnam!
I love the smell of napalm in the morning.
You're gonna need a bigger boat.
I feel the need for speed.
Roads, where we're going, we don't need roads.
Snakes. Why did it have to be snakes?
Vargas? We don't need no Vargas. I don't have to show you any stinking vices.
You make me want to be a better man.
Nobody puts baby in a corner.
I wish I knew how to quit you.
Love means never having to say you're sorry.
He's looking at you, kid.
I've always depended on the kindness. Strange.
All right, Mr. DeMille, I'm ready for my close-up.
Would you be shocked if I put on something more comfortable?
You know how to whistle, don't you, Steve? You just put your lips together and blow.
I'm not bad. I'm just drawn that way.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Cinematic Adventures. If you're listening to us on the go, you can catch us at Podbean, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, and pretty much anywhere else you get your podcasts. I keep switching it up every time I host, because I can never remember exactly which ones we
like a James
have.
Bond movie. You never know what you're gonna.
What you're gonna get.
You know the general things you're gonna get, but you're never not quite sure how you're gonna get them.
You never know. As always, I am Sean, one of your hosts, and I'm here as always with my partner in crime, Paul.
What if I wasn't here? Then it wouldn't be as always. Hi, I'm Paul.
Nah, well, I don't think you'd let me record an episode by myself.
Why are you in my house?
That's a very good point.
How'd you get a key? How many keys are out there? Where are we?
Well, we're in our new recording studio.
I just moved the room over.
It's actually like a studio now, it feels like.
Yeah, now
I just need a door over there with a red light saying don't disturb when the red light's on.
I did find the red light. It's like
for other purposes.
It's an on-air box that lights up. So, you perv. God, does James Bond ever go to Amsterdam? I feel like James Bond has been to Amsterdam.
I'd be shocked if he didn't.
I think a really funny bit, but it's also super inappropriate, and I could see it more in the Sean Connery era. Would be if James Bond went to Amsterdam, and as he's walking by, women in the red light district were like, James! And he's like, Miss Moneypenny, I don't know who these people are.
So you really think that would be a Connery one? I feel like that's more Roger Moore one.
Maybe even Timothy Dalton.
Nah.
No, he was way too suave.
Yeah.
Pierce Brosnan, maybe.
Pierce Brosnan, I think.
GoldenEye era.
Yeah, GoldenEye era. That's Pierce Brosnan.
I find that Pierce... We're talking about James Bond, by the way. I find that Pierce Brosnan, his movies, they're almost like two separate genres in themselves. Like GoldenEye and Tomorrow Never Dies are a little bit more like on the serious side, and then The World Is Not Enough and Die Another Day.
Yeah, you could see where it was going with World Is Not Enough. Even though we both enjoy that movie thoroughly, you could definitely tell.
It's like the Batman Burton series, yeah. Even though the Joel Schumacher stuff, it's all continuity technically. So it's kind of like that, where the Batman and Batman Returns are one way, and then Batman and Robin and Batman Forever are two totally different ways.
That's actually...
solid analogy.
That's, that's fair.
I'll be here all week.
I like that.
Thank you.
Well, if you haven't figured out by now, we are continuing our James Bond month.
Oh, I thought it was Tim Burton month. That's why I was trying to segue.
No. And for all you out there, please catch our first episode of this month, and that was our... Sean Connery
and intro
an intro episode, and really not a lot about Sean Connery, but you got the gist of it. Mm-hmm. We really went over more the tropes that we've grown accustomed to with the Bond films, talking about all the different things you see in every single Bond film. What I realized we didn't ask each other what's our favorite Sean Connery Bond film. So real quick, Paul,
I'm not ready.
Wow,
go first.
Okay, well, I gotta go Goldfinger. I think Goldfinger is, and no pun intended, the gold standard of the Connery Bond films. And I think it's honestly the gold standard of all Bond films. I think that's where the reason we have Bond now is because of Goldfinger. I truly believe that.
I also think it's got one of the best theme songs.
Well, absolutely. And I think it's one of the best villains.
No, Mr. Bond, I expect you... He's the most cliched villain at this point.
I expect you to die.
Yeah, that is a good
one. Of course, you got the obvious iconic image of... the girl
covered
in the gold paint.
And all the urban legends that came from it.
Yeah.
And also the homage in Quantum of Solace.
That's true. Strawberry Fields.
You know that they're a Bond girl that's going to die when they have a funny name.
Fair enough.
Because there are two Bond girls in every movie. There's the one that... Or, scratch that. A lot of movies have two, maybe even three Bond girls. There's the villain Bond girl, you know, like Xena Onatopp.
Onatopp? Well, Goldfinger had it.
And then you have the Bond girl that survives. Then you have the Bond girl that dies.
Yeah.
Like when Casino Royale came out, they had the woman who was riding the horse. And
yeah.
She like talked about being a Bond girl. And I was like, is she really?
Well, she gets it with Bond. So she technically means Bond girl.
Four scenes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then the woman in Skyfall who... That you know, that didn't go well. We'll talk about Skyfall.
We'll talk about that in a later episode. So obviously we touched on the Sean Connery films last episode, and in this episode we're going to talk about two James Bonds. We're going to talk about obviously Roger Moore, who is actually played the character the more times than anyone in the film franchise, the continuity franchise that we know and love. Technically, he is tied with Sean Connery for 7, but we don't count Never Say Never Again because technically it wasn't filmed in the continuity of this franchise. And we're also going to talk about On Her Majesty's Secret Service, which has the one and only appearance of George Lazenby as James Bond. So we're going to actually start there. And the way to start there is to kind of go back to Connery. And after You Only Live Twice, Connery becomes disenchanted with the role for a couple of reasons. One, I think he wasn't comfortable with the fame that the character brought him. And two, he was very annoyed with the producers that he wasn't getting the right money for the character. They were, in his words, exploiting him.
Oh, yeah. Like it's not until like his third or fourth film that, or when he comes back, that you really see how much... he gets a pay bump. He also gets licensing rights and merchandising rights.
I mean,
which is a big thing.
When he got brought back for Diamonds Are Forever, I think not the producers, but the studio, United Artists, gave him like $2 million, gave him a 2-picture deal where he could make any movies he wanted. So, I mean, it was like, okay, this is what he's been wanting. But the producers didn't do that.
No.
That was the studio. Sean Connery resigns from the role, and you know, the studio is very upset with the producers saying, how could you let this happen? And they're like, well, anyone can play Bond. You know, we firmly believe that, Bond doesn't have to be played by Sean Connery in order to be successful. And you know what?
They
obviously look at it now. Yeah. I mean, in retrospect, they were right.
And now that's actually a Bond trope. Like, who's going to be the next Bond?
Who's
going to
be the next Bond? I mean, they didn't want that problem, but in getting that problem, it created, I think, the longevity of this franchise.
Oh yeah, it is a testament to the franchise that they were able to do a recasting basically in continuity.
Yeah.
And just like they assumed also their audiences were not dumb.
Yeah, no, you're right. They got, I think, audiences, even though, again, I don't think there's ever been a truly box office failure of a Bond film. But they judge Bond films, obviously, on its predecessor. So, you know, that's how you judge the success of a Bond film. It's very rare. Now, you can look back on it years later and be claim, like, you know, it's bad, it's good, whatever. But so, who's going to be the next James Bond? Well, they eventually found an unknown male model by the name of George Lazenby.
Yeah.
And we're not going to get into the whole backstory, obviously, but if you really want to know... Go watch the James Bond film franchise documentary, Everything or Nothing. Fantastic. It goes from...
They made a video game called that.
Everything or Nothing?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah, around the same time.
Oh, nice. All right.
Decent games, dude. Daniel Craig was in it as Bond. Wait,
I do remember that. You're right.
It had a killer theme song. And I think Shannon Elizabeth was the Bond girl in it. Like, they actually made it like almost like a movie.
Oh, yeah. Nice. Well,
I'm Googling
You can get any of your information from that documentary. It's a fantastic documentary. And...
Or, if you guys want, the official James Bond Encyclopedia by Steve Rubin.
That is an excellent mention right there, Paul.
You guys will see why.
Why?
Don't worry about it.
Why you guys tee it up like that and not have any, you know...
Don't worry about it.
I hate when you say don't worry about it.
Don't worry
about
it.
Always ends in failure.
Yeah, everything or nothing. Look at this. Actually, look this up.
So...
Oh, it was Pierce Brosnan, excuse me.
See? Failure.
Yeah. What game am I thinking of? Keep talking.
Now I'm intrigued, but
I know, so am I.
Intrigued by your failure here.
Because there was, let's see. Hold on. Pierce Brosnan did reprise his role in this, so I was right about at least that kind of. Richard Kyle, John Cleese, Judi Dench, S, Jaws, Q's, and M. Yep. There's another video game, though, that has Shannon Elizabeth in it. Okay. No, keep talking, because I'm actually looking this up here.
Okay. You didn't stop talking, so I wasn't sure.
That's fair.
So, George Lazenby, in the documentary, claims that he was so set on becoming the next Bond that he did anything he could to get the role. Mm-hmm. Basically just storming in on the producers and just telling them, you know, I'm the new James Bond. And, you know, they would put him through different tests and, you know, was he good in a fight? Could he ride a horse? You know, could he do this? Could he do that? Well, you know what? He pulled it off and they cast him, an absolute unknown, in the role. Now, you could say that that's a smart idea because Connery was an unknown mm-hmm. in many instances. So they go ahead with him and they choose Honor Majesty's Secret Service will be their next film. And apparently they tried to do that one earlier in the series, but they ended up doing Thunderball instead. And this movie, even though it wasn't critically well-received when it came out, it has really
built up a following.
The reputation has greatly improved over the years. It's considered one of the strongest entries in the series, and it's also considered the most faithful to the book, which, you know, a lot of times you don't get. But the big one for this one, I think, is, you know, you get Bond's first, you know, true relationship.
And marriage. Tracy.
That's the big one, played by Diana Rigg, for mm-hmm. all you Avengers fans out there. Not Marvel Avengers.
I was about to say.
Not Marvel Avengers.
Wait, isn't that Uma Thurman? Oh, deep cut. Painful cut.
God, I remember that movie came out. Ugh, so bad. So bad.
Yeah, we don't need to.
Paul, did you ever see Honor Majesty's Secret Service?
I have, yes.
Yes. It's a very good movie. And you know where they get the suit from? Austin Powers, that blue...
The blue frill, suit. Yep.
Because yeah. I would always watch Austin Powers when I was a kid. I'm like, this suit looks ridiculous. And then I remember the first time I watched Iron Man Secrets, I was like, okay.
Oh, I get it.
I get it. So I think this movie really, it kind of goes away from the Connery films. You know, it really is not big on the gadget, you know, thing. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a precursor to Casino Royale in a way, in the Timothy Dalton films. It's a little more realistic. It's a little more serious in tone.
Unlike our recording studio.
Well, he just wants to be, he wants to join in, Maze.
It's Maze the podcat. He's making his appearance.
Yeah. So I don't know how you feel, but it definitely, this movie is worth watching. Mm-hmm. And it's intriguing for it because it's the only one he plays Bond in.
So for me, it's not the James Bond movie that I always think of first. I definitely
no, absolutely not. I agree with that.
I definitely think that it has a lot of bones to it, and it's obviously they, you know, James Bond. The movie starts off with him saving a woman from committing suicide.
Yeah, like I do love the little quip in the beginning where like he goes, you know, to kiss her and she runs away and he goes, "This never happened to the other guy."
Yeah,
that was a nice little, you know, nod back to Connery, but.
Kind of like in Iron Man 2, when he's like, when Don Cheadle walks out, he's like, "It's me, I'm here, let's just move on."
I forgot about that.
That's right. That was a great line when that moved, because that, you know, that big casting debacle. Oh. But, you know, you also got Ernst Stavro Blofeld.
Played by Telly Savalas.
You know, who is arguably James Bond's greatest enemy.
Yes.
It makes me wonder why in, and just full disclosure, we still have not seen No Time to Die, so who knows, but... We got Blofeld in that series, but we didn't get any of his other iconic villains.
No.
Because everybody thought that Bautista was Jaws.
Yeah, that was the big thing in Spectre, that he would become Jaws. Maybe he will.
I can't wait to talk about Spectre, though. What a letdown that movie was.
Well, I think that's the definition of the Daniel Craig Bond franchise. It's good, letdown, good, letdown.
Pretty much, yeah. So
and that's
No Time
I'm
to Die
hoping
should be,
Nine
yeah,
to
should
die,
be fantastic.
No Time to Die is good. I really hope. I really, really, really hope. Because, you know, it's going to be intriguing to see where this franchise goes.
I don't know when we're going to go see it.
Yeah, we'll find a time.
We'll find a time. Oh, you know what? After my rehearsal lunch on Saturday, looking for something to do.
You know when we could go see it? We go see it Sunday.
Sunday morning. Right before my wedding.
Yeah.
I'm sure my wife won't mind.
Nah. There's plenty of movie theaters up in
Producer Melody's going to be sitting in the theater in her wedding dress going, "Which one's James Bond again?"
Wow.
Oh, she made the face. I'm just kidding. Producer Melanie does know her James Bond. Wow. We went to go see Eternals last night, by the way.
Yeah, How was it?
Mildly okay.
Mildly underwhelming.
Wildly okay. Right down the middle. You can listen to the Multiverse Fancast for that one.
Yeah.
But anyway. But going back to you know, Honor Majesty's Secret Service, because after this we'll take a quick break. But I think there is a benefit to casting unknowns. You know, obviously, we see what happens with like the Batman franchise. I hate to use it as like the other standard, but it's the most similar in this regard. Because nowadays, they want those continuity. They want the cinematic universe.
Anytime a big... You know, big, huge characters being cast, it's always intriguing to the audience.
To see who they're talking about.
I mean, you know, it's, you know, again, Bond, Batman, Superman, Spider-Man, you know, any of those, you know, huge characters in, you know, either literature or comic books.
Well, I think Spider-Man has benefited the most by their unknowns. You know, Tobey Maguire was known at the time,
Andrew Garfield was known.
Yeah, but
Tom Holland probably had the least.
He was the biggest unknown out of the Spider-Man. But then you look at like Batman, who they've had big names and smaller names, and you know,
I think honestly, all of them have been fairly big names.
Yeah, you know, I would argue that George Clooney was the biggest name and the biggest letdown at the same time.
Well, Clooney was huge on television.
You know, and Ben Affleck. Say what you will about Batfleck. I really like Batfleck. I know the world is divided on it at this point, but you know, Ben Affleck, I thought, nailed it, even though the initial backlash was huge. The Joker's another character where it's like, who's going to be the next Joker?
Well, Superman. I mean, Christopher Reeve was the ultimate unknown.
Mm-hmm.
And then we didn't have another Superman until Brandon Routh, unknown.
And then you had Henry Cavill, who had a nice little career.
Yeah, he was more known in England, but he was relatively unknown to American audiences.
Well, we went to go see Immortals just because he was in it.
That's right.
We like they had just announced his casting, and they're like, oh, and he's got this movie coming out. And we're like, well, let's go see it. Let's see what Superman's got.
Yeah, that's right.
And that movie was completely forgettable. Actually, I liked Immortals. I think I saw it once afterwards, like in its entirety, and it was definitely not that bad.
Well, also, I mean, look at Bond. I mean, you get Connery, who, again, was not an absolute unknown. He was not a star. Obviously, George Lazenby, absolute unknown. Roger Moore was a television actor.
Mm-hmm.
So he was known to British audiences and to some American audiences. Timothy Dalton was a stage actor. And Pierce Brosnan was probably the most known when he was cast because he had a television show and he'd done some movies. And then you get Daniel Craig, who is really unknown to a lot of audiences.
Mm-hmm.
So, but do you want to take a break or do you want to continue on?
Do you have anything else you want to say about Honor Majesty's Secret Service? Like, go ahead. Yeah.
The biggest thing for me is obviously, you know, during the filming of Honor Majesty's Secret Service, Lazenby's agent, you know, pretty much got it through his head that the franchise wasn't going to last going into the 70s, that the Bond franchise was not going to, you know, make it through that decade. So basically Lazenby, you know, was, I don't know if he was left the role or was fired from the role, you know, 50-50 either way. And he called that in the documentary the biggest regret of his life.
To leave or
to either be fired or leave. I can't remember exactly if he was fired or left. It was like probably a mutual decision.
Well, I mean, the movie made money. Like it,
Bond film has made money, but it wasn't obviously the success that You Only Live Twice. I guess their mentality is the next one should be better. So yeah. Only Live Twice makes $50 million. Well, Honor Majesty's Secret Service should make $60 million, and it didn't. But as we said before, the movie has really grown. You know, its reputation over the last 50 years.
They're saying it's one of the strongest entries in the series, as well as one of the most faithful adaptations of an actual Fleming novel.
So.
And that's the thing. Like, unfortunately, there are two Bonds. There's the novel Bonds, and then there's the movie Bonds.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, the movie Bond tends, especially when we talk about Roger Moore, starts to really go into the campy territory.
Yeah, I totally understand that.
But so. You want to take a quick break?
Let's take a break.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we are talking about Roger Moore. So come back for... More, Mr. Bond? Hey guys, today's episode is brought to you by Raise Energy Drinks. Raise is a proud member of Rep Sports, and if you guys are looking for a little extra kick during your day, whether you need to tackle a workout or you need to get over that afternoon slump, you can always check out Raise Energy, and if you get the checkout and you enter the code CINEMATIC, not only will you be getting a 15% discount, but you'll also be supporting the network. So that's Raise Energy with Rep Sports. Code is CINEMATIC, CINEMATIC.
Welcome back. And so we're going to jump into the third actor to portray James Bond, and that is Sir Roger Moore.
Is he a sir?
He is.
He's a sir?
He's a sir.
A lot of sirs.
What's wrong with a sir?
Nothing.
Okay. You just signed. You just
they're knighted, right? That's yeah. being knighted. Good for them. I think James Bond, the character, is actually knighted as well.
It's possible. I don't remember.
I don't know. In some movies, he's a famous spy. Other movies, he's not. I don't know. I got nothing.
Okay. I just thought you'd bring a little more when you said that.
Well, it's funny because we were watching Eternals last night. Mild spoiler for Eternals. They mentioned Doctor Strange at one point, like as a famous sorcerer. And I was like, people know him? Like, why? How? So that makes me laugh.
Ah, Marvel reference. Love it.
Yeah. Daniel Craig would be a great Marvel character, I think. I could see him in a Thor movie.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, him and Carl Urban.
Carl Urban.
He was in Thor Ragnarok, and I really liked him.
Yeah. Okay.
I don't know. Why do you... host!
You're talking, and you won't stop talking, so I don't know if you have other things you want to talk about. But as he's drinking now his energy drink. But so, Paul, Roger Moore has the most appearances as the character James Bond with 7.
Because they wanted more. I'm not going to stop, so we're going to have to... It's going to be a long episode.
Fair enough.
They won't be asking for another episode. Ah!
Good job.
Expectation subversion.
Your wife is just like, what
miserable
the hell?
All the time? Probably.
So, as we said earlier, you know, James Bonds could either be unknowns or they could be fairly famous people. Well, Roger Moore was fairly well known for the TV show The Saint. Did you ever see the Val Kilmer movie The Saint?
No, but I know of it. Yeah,
so that obviously is a movie based off of the TV show that Roger Moore started in the early 60s. He was also on the American Western Maverick for a year. I believe it was like the final season of that where he played like James Garner's British cousin or something like that. Really
father's former roommate.
There you go. He was knighted by Queen Elizabeth II in 2003 for services to charity.
Oh. Because
he's a UNICEF Goodwill Ambassador. So he's
good
not
for
just.
Him. I know, like him already now.
There you go. See? So we start off with Live and Let Die, which, you know, and Man with the Golden Gun are the first two Roger Moore Bond films. And you can honestly say, in my opinion, maybe other people disagree with me, I think they're two of the more weaker Bond films
which
of
ones?
The franchise. Live and Let Die.
Live and Let Die.
And Man with the Golden Gun. Great theme songs, though.
Oh, I mean, yeah.
We get Live and Let Die, which is, you know
an iconic, not even just an iconic James Bond song, but
it's
also
an
just
iconic song. I mean, Paul McCartney and Wings, man, you can't get any better than that. The song is weird in terms of, like, it just doesn't feel like a Bond song. Like, when you see the opening scene and you hear that song with, like, the traditional Bond background and stuff like that, it's weird to hear it, but it's a great song.
Oh, it's stuck in my head.
Man with the Golden Gun is also a very good one. Of course, Man with the Golden Gun, you get Christopher Lee as the villain, which
and
is
also,
good.
And also, I think the actual Golden Gun has now become an iconic...
Because you see it in the GoldenEye game.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of the
it's an iconic...
Extras.
Oh, God.
But, so, I think talking about how those two were mildly unsuccessful movies, again, they made money... Let's not make them out to be box office failures, but in the minds of the producers, they weren't the successes they were expected to be.
Live and Let Die, on a budget of $7 million, made $161
million. I know.
That's
what I was looking at the grosses the other day, and there's not a single Bond film that is a box office failure.
Never.
So, you know, you could say, again, once the budgets got higher, then, you know, yes, they became harder to meet those, but... I mean, depending on the movie, you know, like Skyfall, I think, beat its budget in opening weekend. So, but there was a lot of friction going on between the producers at that time. And eventually after Man with the Golden Gun, the one producer, Harry Saltzman, was going bankrupt and he had to sell his stake in the Bond franchise. He would not sell it off to his partner. That sounded awesome.
That's fine.
We're just going to believe that didn't happen.
So stop talking. Just go.
I'm going. So the friction was so high that he wouldn't sell his stakes to his partner, Broccoli. So he ended up selling it to United Artists.
I still can't handle the broccoli thing.
The broccoli.
Yeah.
So.
Like, I would get steak and broccoli. It's a great superfood. It's cheap and very effective and...
Oh, we should really get a broccoli sponsor for this podcast.
That'd be hilarious. I'd be the happiest guy.
You would be ecstatic.
Between Ray's energy drinks, our secret sponsors that nobody knows about yet, and potentially broccoli, man, we'd be living in the stratosphere. We're gonna have a recording studio that's like an actual recording studio.
All you could eat broccoli for Paul.
All right, back to it. Back to James Bond.
Okay, so now the Bond franchise is dependent on the success of United Artists, the movie company. And for anyone...
That's alarming.
Pretty much. So the next Bond film had to be a success. I really truly believe that the next one had to be a huge hit for this franchise to continue. And the next one was Spy Who Loved Me. And they just went way over the top on that one, like, you know, in terms of, you know, production design, in terms of story, in terms of stunts, and boy, did they hit it out of the park. I think Spy Who Loved Me is the one or 1A best films of the Roger Moore films.
That is a big...
That's my opinion, because it's also the first time we get to see Jaws. It's the first time he makes an appearance. You get Barbara Bach, the now famous wife of the Beatles, Ringo.
Yeah.
Is the Bond girl.
Anya Armasova?
Yes.
Armasova?
Yes. And you get...
Casted 4 days before principal photography began.
Nice.
Wow.
And I think you get one of the best pre-title sequences when he's skiing down the mountain.
Oh, yeah.
And he jumps off the cliff and parachutes with the British, you know, the Union Jack as the parachute.
I really like... any ski sequences with James Bond? There are a few. Oh, I liked World is Not Enough is a really good one.
So good.
Checking the oil lines. This is a very ineffective way to check your oil lines. Are you expecting company? And they have like the propellers, yes. The snowmobiles on parachute. Oh my god, I love James Bond tropes. I know we talked about it a lot in our previous episode, but oh my god, this is where the tropes really start.
This is where the Bond franchise, because I think again also with Spy, Live and Let Die, and with Man with the Golden Gun, the character was written in the Sean Connery mold.
Yeah.
So Roger Moore was trying to be Sean Connery, and Roger Moore knew, I cannot be him. I am not him. So I think when Spy Who Loved Me came around, they really started to adapt the character into the mold that Roger Moore worked, and that was, you know, the I wouldn't say jokey, but the puns. You know, the debonair, you know, instead of the cold-blooded killer.
Yeah. Because
if you watch the Roger Moore films, I mean, you don't really get that sense of, like, he'll just turn around and shoot you dead, you know?
No.
He'll pun you to death more than that.
Oh, God. I really, like, if I'm ever murdered by someone and their last thing they say to me is a pun, I don't know how I'll react. It'll either be,
you'll
like...
be dead, so...
No, as I'm, like, dying, that's the last thing I hear, and I'm like, oh, solid.
Yeah. Yeah, Moore's Bond was very different from the Ian Fleming creation. You know, again, he said he was more of a debonair playboy. He would always have a gadget or a trick when he needed it. Mm-hmm. You know, it fit the 70s. It fit that time period.
Just once, I want to see a James Bond movie where he tries to use the gadget that's supposed to save him, and it doesn't work.
Yeah.
Like... Every time you watch, Q Branch is literally MacGuffin Central. It is the thing that's going to get him out of this very specific situation. Like Goldeneye, he needs the watch laser to get out of the one tiny situation he's in.
Mm-hmm.
He never uses it again. Or the exploding pen. It's only because the Boris has a pen fixation. That's the only reason that works.
Or in Goldfinger with the don't touch the red button in the Aston Martin.
And he needs to touch that red button at a very specific time.
Very specific time.
Imagine if he's like, all right, here's this very specific gadget. Use it for this thing. Okay. Use it for that thing and it doesn't work for that thing. Oh. Dang it.
Yeah. He, you know, Roger Moore admits, you know, I am not the cold-blooded killer type. You know, I played it mostly for laughs.
Yeah. He looks like the fun uncle at a party.
That's fair.
Yeah. Not the drunk uncle.
I honestly think, and I truly believe this, that the Roger Moore James Bond is, you know, more the inspiration for Austin Powers than the Connery James Bond or the, you know, Dalton James Bond. I think a lot of this, the fun stuff you see in the Austin Powers movies is taken from, you know, this era of Bond films. But so Spy Who Loved Me, huge hit. Huge hit. And they're going to do For Your Eyes Only next, but they decide with the success of Star Wars, let's do something a little more scientific. And they come out with Moonraker, which was such a letdown, that movie. Oh,
it
my
got
God.
Nominated for the Academy Award for Best Visual Effects. It eventually became one of the highest grossing films of the series at the time. On a budget of $34 million, it made $210 million.
It makes its money, but it just is such a bad movie. It really is.
Lasers. I did like using the Moonraker laser in GoldenEye. Yes. That was always fun. Lasers only, guys.
And then again, another great theme song with sung by the same woman who did Goldfinger.
Mm.
You know, like, I enjoy mostly all of the Bond songs. I don't think there's one I truly don't like, but there's obviously some that are, you know, much more memorable than others.
Yeah. I could not tell you the Quantum of Solace theme song.
Oh, somebody. It was somebody.
that we used to know?
Oh, wasn't Sam Smith?
No, he did The Writings on the Wall for another one of them.
I guess one that was for Quantum Solace.
Let's see.
Because then, obviously, Adele did Skyfall.
Oh, still so good.
And then Spectre? Maybe he did Spectre then.
Yeah, I think he did.
He might have
did Spectre. Alicia Keys.
Alicia Keys did Quantum Solace.
Yeah.
I have not seen that movie since we saw it in theaters.
It is rough.
It just was boring.
Which is a shame, too, because I like the Bond girl in it. Olga
Kurylenko from Hitman.
Yeah, and also from, spoilers, Black Widow.
Absolutely useless in that movie.
Oh, God, I don't want to talk about it. But, like, they looked like they were teeing her up for her own movie. Maybe. And because it also ends with her not getting with Bond.
Yeah, that was one of the few times that
Bond
girl...
I think he goes to, like, kiss her, and she's like, what are you doing?
Yeah, no, I think, again, they were playing on the tropes that we were so used to.
Oh, 1,000%. I will still argue Quantum of Solace has one of the best starting opening scenes.
Because it opens right immediately after...
With Bond catching that guy and the spinning thing.
It was the first time we'd ever see a Bond film open up right where the previous one left off.
So typically, and these are the perfect example, every Bond film has basically been its own standalone Bond film.
Absolutely.
There's very few references to previous Bond films.
Yeah, I think For Your Eyes Only, I think, is the only other reference to his wife.
Yes.
Because he's at her gravestone at the beginning of For Your Eyes Only. But yeah, you're right. I don't think there's really any other real...
James Bond was the anthology series.
Yeah,
like,
that's fair.
Literally. Jack Wade in...
Yes, and then, I guess...
He cameos.
Felix Leiter. But again, it's not like, oh, hey, remember that time
remember
we did
that
this?
Mission we did? And
no, it's just, it's kind of like, you know, hey, we've been friends forever, you know.
Yeah.
You know, that type of thing.
But, so, it wasn't until the Daniel Craig series that they finally started acknowledging... Like, basically, you find out that Blofeld did everything.
Yeah.
Still, between that and the con thing.
We'll get into that. Just our disappointment.
Well, because they're like, he's not Blofeld. It's just like he's not Khan.
He's not Khan.
That's not Khan. And then he says it. We're like,
I am Khan. And we're just like, oh.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, all right. We know.
We got it. We kind of guessed that. Yeah. Kind of guessed that. So Moonraker comes out, as you just said. It was a success, but
I liked Ben Affleck's version in Jay and Silent Bob. I don't want to say it. Yeah, I don't want to say it.
I forgot about that.
There you go. Oh, lost Sean. We lost. Sean's losing it right now.
I forgot about that.
If you guys ever get a chance to watch Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back,
that was good.
There is a nod to Ben Affleck's new role, and it is a play on the title.
Oh, God. Well, the next Roger Moore Bond film, as I said before, I think For Your Eyes Only and Spy
Who Loved
Me.
We didn't even mention that in Moonraker, we also had the appearance of Holly Goodhead.
Well, that's on you, Paul.
The names alone, I love it.
And that was in the book.
And she's a doctor.
That was in the book.
Oh, God. Dr. Holly Goodhead.
Many people believe that, like, this stuff was created, like, by
the
movies. No, this stuff was in the books.
Yo, Ian Fleming was a perv. I love it.
But
Dr. Goodhead. Paging Dr. Goodhead.
We got to look up, is there an actual Dr. Goodhead somewhere in the world?
We will find out. We will find out.
But yeah, no, For Your Eyes Only was the next one. And as I said before, I think that and Spy Who Loved Me are like 1A of the Roger Moore.
That's fair.
I love the opening scene to For Your Eyes Only where he's at his wife's grave and he gets picked up by a helicopter. And the helicopter is being controlled by even though they never say his name, because I think they were still in like legal, like they couldn't use the Blofeld name.
Yeah.
But it was a bald guy in a wheelchair. It was the most ridiculous thing in the world.
Didn't they drop him into a smoke sack? Yeah.
It was just, he picks him up with the helicopter. Like, he takes the helicopter leg and he pushes it through the wheelchair. And he's, oh, my God. But it was fun. But, you know, I liked that one.
Legal rights are weird.
Yeah, legal rights are weird. Then we get Octopussy. Now, yes, Austin Pussy, too. So two things are interesting about the filming of Octopussy. One, Roger Moore had mentioned that he was interested in leaving the role after For Your Eyes Only, but they enticed him back, you know, for two more films. But during the production of Octopussy, a separate movie was being made, Never Say Never Again, with Sean Connery as James Bond.
Imagine.
So there was a big push on making sure that Octopussy was like the most
gold standard,
extravagant James Bond film released, and it ended up taking more money than Never Say Never Again. Never Say Never Again was just such a bland movie. It was just like there's a character named James Bond, but it's not. The only thing I had going for it was that it was Connery. But
it's amazing how they're able to do that. Movie rights are the strangest things.
There's a whole backstory that we never went into with the the rights to Thunderball and stuff like that, and Never Say Never Again basically is a remake of Thunderball. Mm-hmm. So there's a whole, again, I recommend you watch in the documentary if you want to hear a little more about that. We're not going to get into that, but Octopussy comes out again, huge hit. So Spy Who Loved Me, Free Rides Only, Octopussy, I think are the tops of the Roger Moore franchise. And then we get the final one, View to a Kill. Which just was...
I don't even remember it. Like, that's how much
Christopher Walken was so over the top as the villain.
What?
But he was... I mean, Moore was the oldest actor to play Bond at the time. He was 45 years old at the time he got the job in Live and Let Die. He was 58 when he was filming View to a Kill.
Really?
Yeah. He was old.
Interesting. Yeah. Indeed.
Played the part for more than 12 years, 7 films. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was... View to a Kill is just... Nah.
It's just meh?
Just meh.
Just meh.
So, any specific Roger Moore ones you go to more than any?
Roger Moore, like, it, because he has so many, he's always kind of like the James Bond that people think about. So, like, when it comes to Bonds, especially the older generation, they always think Connery or Roger Moore. Like, mm-hmm. those are the two go-to. Unfortunately, Lazenby, and I don't know, are we talking about Timothy Dalton today, too? We can if you want.
I mean, we can. I think we had an extra day in the month, but Dalton has only got 2 movies, so we can do.
You want to talk?
Hey, Dalton? Everybody, listen, you lucked out. We got extra stuff to talk about.
I mean, because we might have a bonus episode this month for you. We don't know.
We like to tease a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. Just a little tease.
Just a tease. It's the definition of Paul's life.
Wow, that's weird. That is a weird way to explain my life. But anyway. You want to talk about? Let's talk about Timothy Dalton. He's got 2: Living Daylights and License to Kill.
Well, so here's a backstory to the Timothy Dalton Bond films. So during the production of Free Rides Only, Pierce Brosnan's first wife was cast as one of the Bond girls.
Can we just talk about how Sean's doing this all off memory? Like, he's not looking up anything. I literally threw him on the spot because we have 20 minutes left in our episode, and he's just going. And
I'm
love
just
it.
Going. I'm just going. So yeah, so his wife was cast as one of the Bond girls who is killed in For Your Eyes Only. Mm-hmm. Spoiler alert. And I guess
spoiler alert.
Jokes were made during the filming that he was going to be the next Bond, and lo and behold, he was actually cast as James Bond for Living Daylights. He was on the. You never watched the show Remington Steele?
Yeah.
That was obviously he got that role. He became a huge TV star. The show was canceled, and he. Auditioned for Living Daylights, got cast, and then they picked up the TV show and brought it back.
Almost despite him, it felt like.
Well, see, I could never figure out, did he, was he not allowed to play Bond because of the show, or did but apparently the producers didn't want him if he was going to be in the TV show. They didn't want someone, that was known for something else at the same time being cast as Bond. So the deal fell through, and they ended up casting Timothy Dalton, who's a Shakespearean actor. Apparently they offered him the role back in the early 70s after Connery, but he was deemed too young.
Interesting. Because he's 75 now. Holy crap.
75 now, yeah. But I love Timothy Dalton.
I'm a big Timothy Dalton fan.
We talked about The Rocketeer a couple months ago.
He was on Penny Dreadful for a long time.
Hot Fuzz.
Hot Fuzz. He was fantastic in Hot Fuzz. Doom Patrol.
Yes.
He is fantastic on Doom Patrol. Yeah. Like that show alone is just, if you're a comic book fan, I highly recommend Doom Patrol.
Timothy Dalton is a fantastic actor. And yes. you see that in the 2 Bond films.
He brings a lot of gravitas.
He does. And I said this from the minute we saw Casino Royale. I said that was Timothy Dalton.
Yeah.
If you watch Timothy Dalton in Living Daylights and License to Kill, basically they were trying to do what they did with Casino Royale back at that, and it just
he was the grittiest Bond.
It wasn't the right time.
No,
it was just the audiences were coming off of Roger Moore, and it was just such a culture shock, I guess, to them that they just were like they did not care for it. Living Daylights though is known for it's the final James Bond film that's based off of one of Ian Fleming's books.
Mm-hmm.
Now I can't remember if any of the other movies were based off of short stories, but I know officially Living Daylights was the last one based off of a full novel.
So this is a perfect little segue. So Steve Rubin in the Complete James Bond Movie Encyclopedia says, and I quote, "Unlike Moore, who always seems to be in command, Dalton's Bond sometimes looks like a candidate for the psychiatrist's couch, a burnt out killer who may have just enough energy left for one final mission. That was Fleming's Bond, a man who drank to diminish the poison in his system, the poison of a violent world with impossible demands. He is the suffering Bond." Again, that's Steve Rubin, the Complete James Bond Movie Encyclopedia.
Perfectly said.
Yeah, guy seems to know his stuff.
He does. He does. Timothy Dalton, and I keep harping on the documentary Everything or Nothing, but you know, Timothy Dalton said when he was cast, he was like, well, where do you want to go with this? Like, do you just want me to be Roger Moore, or do you want to start something different? And he was like, well, if they told me I just wanted to... If we just want to continue what we had with Roger Moore, he would have been like, oh, then I don't want to do it.
Yeah.
You know, I want to do something different, and I want to bring this character back to the way Ian Fleming wrote it. You know, it's like, this guy's a cold-blooded killer.
And also, because you know what it is, and like, it's funny, you listen to any of our other podcasts, whether it's something on here or whether it's on Multiverse Fancast especially, when we talk about adaptations of beloved characters, especially, you know, comic book characters, the big one nowadays, James Bond is considered a British superhero of sorts. He's a cultural icon.
Yeah.
So for any British actor to bring him to the big screen, it is a big thing, and it's an important thing. So I can understand Timothy Dalton being like, hey, I'm about to do this movie. You know, the rest of the movies have been, you know, whatever they were. I want to bring the character to the screen. There are some actors who will just do their paycheck. They like, oh, a movie role? Oh, a big movie role? All right, I'll take it. But then there are a lot of other actors who they take the craft very seriously. You'll hear, especially, like I said, especially superhero actors nowadays, because that's like the big thing. They'll either do extensive research on their character, or they'll be completely indifferent. Like Benedict Cumberbatch walked into a comic book store dressed as Doctor Strange to buy Doctor Strange comics. Like that went viral. And then you have other characters like, oh, I know the comic, but I've never read it.
Well, so, that's the worst. Like, why would you ever admit something like that to me?
Yeah, so sometimes it's... Or you get that actor who's like, I never did as a kid, but when I got the role, I did research.
Yeah.
I can respect that. Because not everybody's like us doing a podcast in, you know, in the podcast studio in my basement. Just
on Ma, the meatloaf!
We want it now. Sorry, you can't Wedding Crashers me and not expect me to keep going with it.
Seeing if you're on your toes.
Yeah, for me, like, to play James Bond, if you don't have an idea that James Bond is a killer. He's a government agent. He's queen and country. Like, that's who he's supposed to be. And then he has all these one-time relationships and all this alcohol just to diminish that feeling that he has. Because his life is basically, I think, what was it, in one of the movies, Skyfall or anything like that, where like Moneypenny goes to his apartment and it's literally just barren. It's like a couch and like the TV's on like a weird stand. So for me, like that's James Bond. Like he doesn't have a social life outside. Like everything he does, like that's why he parties and drinks on his missions, because that's his social life.
Mm-hmm.
So Timothy Dalton, I think I appreciate way more as an adult.
Definitely. As an adult, you look back and you're just like, wow. What did we miss by him not doing more? You know, and I'm looking at the Wikipedia page right now of The Living Daylights. Again, I don't know how true this is because, you know, everything Wikipedia says is you know, factually, you know, correct. But as I said before, you know, Pierce Brosnan was cast as the role and then lost the role. But it says here another actor that was up for the role and was very much impressed, not by the head producer, Albert Broccoli, but by, you know, everyone else, Sam Neill.
That'd be fun.
That would have been interesting. Apparently, MGM recommended Mel Gibson for the role, which, you know, 80s Mel Gibson, I mean, I could see it, you know, but I don't know how, you know, that would have won over at the time, because how many movies would he have done as the character?
Mm-hmm.
Who knows? That would have been interesting. But so we get Timothy Dalton, and immediately, you know, the movies aren't as successful as previous ones. I personally enjoy License to Kill, because
mm-hmm.
the reason I like that one so much is because it's Bond on his own. He's basically kicked out of MI6 because the whole story is Felix Leiter and his wife, you know, get married, and he captures a very big drug dealer at the beginning of the movie, and the drug dealer escapes and he exacts revenge. He kills Leiter's wife and he basically attempts to kill Leiter by throwing him in water with a shark. The shark, I think, bites one of his legs off, but he's left for dead, but he lives. But then Bond just goes on a mission. I mean, Bond is set. He is going to destroy this man, kill him, whatever. And it just it's a Bond story we never saw before.
This movie reminds me of help me out here. Is it Quantum of Solace, where same thing? He kind of like loses his 00 status, and or is that Spectre? No, Quantum of Solace. Yeah,
it might be. Yeah. Where he's just kind of off the...
He's off the grid, like, he's not officially working, and then he is officially working. Again, that's a movie I don't remember enough.
Yeah, but with License to Kill, you saw the cold, you know, of Timothy Dalton, and he just, I mean, he sells it to me.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So good. And, you know, it's also the most violent Bond film, you know, at the time. I mean, they went... Also, you get a young Benicio Del Toro in that movie. Plays one of the henchmen of the drug dealer, and he gets killed in a very, you know, for something you never saw before in a Bond film. I mean,
what was that again?
He gets lowered into a it was like cutting up all the drugs, so like a blades of, you know, like one of those machines with like blades that are running, and he just fell right in, and just like you see the blood and all that stuff. So I mean, it was over the top for a Bond film at the time. I think it was the first PG-13 Bond film.
Look at that.
I think it's
also got one of the coolest names.
License to Kill.
Well, because, you know, the License to Kill is one of James Bond's, like... It's a trope.
Yeah.
You know, James Bond's always had his license to kill. Is that a real thing?
And I was mistaken. Living Daylights is a short story, not a novel. So, but it was the last movie based off of a Ian Fleming idea. So...
We will allow this transgression to pass.
I appreciate it.
I think we can forgive you because you just did all that off the top of your head with a little help from Wikipedia. If anything, I'm impressed.
With a little help from our friends.
Our friends at Wikipedia and our friends.
Oh, yeah. We're good.
And our friend, the complete James Bond movie encyclopedia by Steve Rubin.
Absolutely.
That's been very helpful for all
this. That is very big help. But so we get... License to Kill is 89, mm-hmm. and the next Bond film is GoldenEye in 95. So why is there a 6-year gap between those two movies? Well, let me tell you. Remember when I said that the one producer sold his film rights to United Artists? Well, this is where it came back to bite them in the ass, because that studio was going through so many problems at the time, being tied down to MGM, which was going through like money issues, all that stuff, and... Basically, the rights of the Bond franchise were being used kind of like as a, you know, okay, well, if we do this, we want this, you know, that type of like a deal, you know, it was like a ploy used. And it just did not go well until finally Timothy Dalton was like, I don't know when this is going to happen, guys, but I'm out. Because he planned to do another one. It wasn't like they were like, Timothy, you suck, goodbye.
Yeah.
You know, they had plans to do a third Timothy Dalton Bond film, and who knows what we would have gotten, you know? Like I said, I think very much like Honor, Majesty, Secret Service, I think people look back now, especially after Daniel Craig, and they look at the Timothy Dalton, they go like, oh, that's what he was trying to do.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm.
So, like I said, I don't think Dalton gets enough credit
for
the two films he did.
A little bit of pioneering.
Yeah. I mean, again, he only had two appearances, and, you know, I think he did a good job. What would the third one have been like? We'll never know.
Mm-hmm.
And if he had done a third one, would we have gotten Pierce Brosnan back? We don't know.
We'll never know.
We'll never know.
And knowing's half the battle.
What did you think of the two?
Same thing. They are movies that grew on me over time. I think I appreciate them more as an adult, as somebody who's enjoyed the Daniel Craig Bond stories and has seen
Because it's funny, we didn't grow up on these particularly, like our generation especially. No, we grew up on Pierce Brosnan. We grew up on Pierce Brosnan, Craig.
And well, we grew up on Pierce Brosnan, and then obviously Daniel Craig came in. But we had access to these movies, you know, with video. I mean, I know, like for me, again, my dad had, if not all of them, most of the Connery films on video. Mm-hmm. He did not have any Roger Moore ones. I didn't see those till a lot later. And the same thing with the Timothy Dalton. I didn't see those till a lot later. But you know, I grew up on the Connery movies as well.
But
you know, we grew up during the 90s, and that's the Pierce Brosnan era of James Bond. Mm-hmm. So I mean, it's a lot of times you're tied down to the one that was going on while you were growing up.
Yeah.
You know, for all those who grew up in the 60s, it's Connery. If you grew up in the 70s, it's Roger Moore.
Mm-hmm.
If you grew up in the 80s, it's either or. You know, you could say, well, I was a Roger Moore fan or I'm a Timothy Dalton fan. That'd be an interesting question for a lot of people who grew up with that during that time. But, you know, it really just depends. But you look back now with our access to streaming and to DVDs and all that stuff. I mean, all these movies are pretty much, you can pick whatever you want at any time.
Yeah.
I think they're all on Amazon Prime right now, honestly.
I wouldn't be surprised. Or like something like Paramount Plus or something like that.
One of the streamers I know has a bunch of Bond films on it. Maybe not all of them, but a good amount of them.
I can't handle all these streaming apps. There's so many.
I thank God for them, man. There's just, you know, so much you can find. It's great.
Yeah, but you know what? It's the same thing with DVDs. Like, I always had the problem as a kid. Like, I have this movie on DVD, but I never watch it because I don't want to get up and put the DVD in.
That's everybody. That's everybody.
So, like, with streamers, I'm like, I have this movie on Netflix, but I'm watching Disney Plus right now, and I don't want to switch over.
Okay, I'm not that bad.
But, like, look at Spider-Man. Like, if you wanted to watch the entire Marvel Cinematic Universe, A, what is wrong with you? Because that is a year-long commitment with graphs needed at this point. But also, you would have to take out all the Spider-Man movies because they're not on Disney Plus.
Well, then.
So that's just the world we live in nowadays.
That is. So I thought of something that we should do that we didn't do at the end of the last episode.
Cuddle?
Well, that'll be for the night before your wedding.
Okay.
But why don't we do a Star City rating of the Bond portrayals?
Of
Sean Connery as Bond, of George Lazenby as Bond.
And Timothy Dalton will save.
And Roger Moore.
We'll save Brosnan and Craig.
Well, Brosnan and Craig for, you know,
For their respective episodes.
Because
we can definitely do a single episode on Pierce Brosnan.
Oh, absolutely.
And a single episode on Daniel Craig.
Yeah, I mean,
because we'll talk about the movies. They're a little bit more recent. And
we have them a little more ingrained in our heads because, again, as we said, we grew up on them. And obviously the Craig films, you know, are fairly recent. 15 years. Wow. Mm.
I'd be down for something like that because there's no such thing as a bad Bond actor in this, which is nice. Like, there's never been a Bond where we're like, he's the worst.
Wait for it. We'll wait for whoever gets cast after Craig.
Well, we'll talk about that at some point.
Well, that'll be at the end of the Craig episode. We're going to list our
top picks.
Our top picks for who we think is going to be the next Bond or should be the next Bond.
So let's see, Sean Connery, I'm going to give him a 4.
Okay.
He is, like, unfortunately, it's because he is the first and kind of where everybody else based their lot of their performance on. So I'd go 4 for Connery.
Okay.
3 for Lazenby, just because we only got him in the one movie.
We only got him in the one. And again, what if?
Yeah.
You know?
3.5 for Roger Moore.
Okay.
Just because for a longest running Bonds, most movies, et cetera, et cetera. And Timothy Dalton, I think I'm going to give a 4 to.
Okay.
Even though he only had the two movies, especially looking back, he is what, for me, like when I think of Bond, it's either him or Brosnan. Like off the top of my head, like that's who I imagine.
Okay.
As much as I love Daniel Craig, and we're going to talk about that, but when I think Bond, those are the two that for some reason just immediately pop into mind.
All righty then. Well, I'm going to start with Connery, and I'm going to give Connery a 4.5 because, I mean, he is
almost perfect.
I mean, there's no way to be perfect because none of these actors technically fit the description of the Bond character in the book.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if you want to be technical about it, nobody was perfect in their role, but, you know,
except semantics. For you as a podcaster, Sean.
Yeah, there you go. But Connery is the gold standard of actors who played this character. He created the character we know and love today.
Mm-hmm.
Some actors copied him. Some actors tried to deviate from him. You do what you want to do. But he is, to me, the best one to ever play the character. George Lazenby, like you only got the one appearance, so I'm going to give him a 3. Respectable. Sure. He did it for a non-actor.
Mm-hmm.
He did a good job.
Oh, yeah.
I would have liked to have seen maybe another movie for him just to see where his acting chops would have brought him if he, you know, did he get? Would he have gotten better? Would he have gotten worse?
I think most of the time with non-actor actors, they only get better.
Yeah,
I mean, it's rare for them to get worse.
I also think he, I think it worked for him with the movie that was chosen for his Bond. It turned out to be, you know, a maybe not an over the top idea story wise. It was definitely a more realistic film, and it worked.
Mm-hmm.
Roger Moore, I'm gonna go 3.5. As you said, you got to give him a little props. He played the character the longest.
For a lot of generations, he was Bond.
He is Bond. I mean, his Bonds are just, his Bond films are just, I hate to say it, they're like silly. But not, you know, I can't blame him for that.
They started the Bond camp.
Yes. Again, as I said before, I mean, a lot of the stuff you see in the Roger Moore films was a lot of the jokes you would eventually get in like the Austin Powers franchise. Uh-huh. But you also could see what they tried to do in the first two movies by making him a little more like Connery, and it just didn't work. So instead of playing to an actor who's no longer with the franchise, let's make this more, you know, for the actor we have. And you know what? They succeeded, and Roger Moore went another 5 movies. So, hey, you did something right. And Timothy Dalton, I got to give a... I'm going to give him a 3.5.
That's fair.
I love License to Kill. I think that's a great movie. Living Daylight's a little less of a movie.
Mm-hmm.
But again, just I feel like we missed the opportunity with him as that character. I would have loved to have seen more films with him as the character. Yes, that would have taken away from Pierce Brosnan, who I love Pierce Brosnan, but I just think, especially now after Daniel Craig has done the role, Timothy Dalton, to me, you look back and you're going like, wow, you know, we had that.
He's a good balance.
Yes. There's really no humor in his portrayal, but I think that was a choice, and I liked it. So, yeah, that is our, I guess you could say, Star City ratings so far for the actors who have played the character of Bond. We'll obviously talk about Pierce Brosnan next time. And then the week after that, we'll hit Daniel Craig. This has been fun as always.
We have Fan Feedback Friday.
Oh, thank you, Paul.
Fan Feedback Friday. What is one thing every Bond movie should have? So this is a fun one. Great theme song.
Absolutely.
A villain's name with a play on words.
Fair enough.
The most fashionable suits.
Good point.
Gadgets.
Obviously.
And cute toys. Yeah. That sounds naughty.
Cute toys.
Imagine if Q had a Q-tip. That's what they should call every time he gives Bond advice, Q-tips.
You should write that.
You know, the Q stands for quality. I never knew that.
Oh.
Yeah. Quality tip.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you're talking about the Q-tip, not Q branch.
Like. Oh, no. Quartermaster. That stands for quartermaster.
Quartermaster Corps.
Yeah. What?
I don't know.
All right, then.
I'm just saying words at this point.
Don't worry. We hit an hour. We're done.
Oh, we're good. We hit our mark.
We hit our mark. Just about.
Just about. So, Paul, why don't you tell everybody where they can hear us?
Well, they're listening to us right now. Why don't you tell them?
Well, where else they can hear us?
Oh, word. So if you guys are looking for more content, not only from us, but from our other podcasts and from our main websites and all that stuff, you can find us on Facebook, Cinematic Adventures. You can also find us at the Misfit Faction on Facebook. I would keep an eye on both those pages over the next couple of days.
Why?
Just, I think it's a good idea.
Oh, okay.
For those of you guys who don't, you know, just looking for more content, looking for some exciting news, just throwing it out there. Maybe you should check that out. Working on that novel. But anyway, so yeah, you can find us on those pages. Make sure you like, comment, share, subscribe with your friends. And we also have our YouTube channel, the Misfit Faction Media Network. You have our Instagram, which is The Misfit Faction. You have our Twitter, which is just Misfit Faction. So the names get smaller as I go.
Basically, you have everything.
So look up Misfit Faction and see what happens. You also have our website, themisfitfaction.com. There's going to be some new content exploring on that pretty soon. So make sure you guys keep an eye out on that. And also annoy Ronnie to get that all done, because that's, you know, he's doing the website. You could also find some of our fun affiliates like Bibliophiles Assemble on Instagram, where you can find book reviews and producer Melanie's work, which is way better than ours.
Well, that's obvious.
Better quality.
Okay.
Yeah, no, that's fair. We have better quantity. She has better quality. Mm-hmm. Working on that Bookstagram page over there. But so yeah, that's that, Jack.
Well, I'm gonna give a quick shout out here for anybody who's listening. Why don't you give a little congratulations in the comments section to Paul over here and producer Melanie, because by our next episode they will be officially married for a second time.
Yes. Due to COVID, we had to do the town hall wedding last year. We pushed our reception back, and we are actually getting our reception done this coming Sunday.
We never thought we'd get to this point.
There was a lot of concern.
Oh, yeah. No, we just never thought Melanie would actually go through with it. But
twice.
Seriously.
Yeah.
And she deserves all the
tax write-offs and benefits. Yeah. She's doing all right. What? You just hear in the background, who?
Wait, what? What am I entitled to?
Edit. But yeah, so we are very excited and we are looking forward to it. And there's going to be plenty of pictures on the misfitfaction.com.
Yeah, we're going to have a special episode during the ceremony.
Oh, God. No, we should record you and Ronnie's speeches and have that actually be a bonus episode.
I don't know about that. It's bad enough I got to speak in public. I don't like being recorded in public.
But what are you?
This is not public.
It goes public.
Yeah, but no one's listening.
You'd be surprised.
Okay.
We have listeners all around the world. We do. It's true. But anyway,
it's not like a burner, not a burner account you use just to listen to our podcast.
Gonna dark web it. All right, wrap up the show.
Oh, fine, Paul. Jeez, God, it's not like you got anything to do. All right, everybody. Well, this has been fun as always. And as always, I'm Sean.
And I'm Paul.
And congratulations, Paul and Melanie.
Thanks. We'll be back next week.
Maybe.